Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday Night Discussion Group, January 28th, 2014. We'll be discussing again Steve Ozenich's book, The Great Pain Deception. We'll be in chapters 28 and 29 tonight, which is chapter 28. It's called Breathe In. We're going to be talking about breathing techniques and what breathing does for the nervous system and how it can actually help us get better quicker. And we're going to be talking in chapter 29 about setting goals, and it's so important to set goals, but a lot of people doesn't know that, you know, learning to walk again, and, you know, in that learning to walk again, we all know to set a goal, but the goal could be as much as, you know, moving the finger first before you can move your hand, and then moving your hand before you can move your arm. So we'll be talking about some of that and getting into that, and I think it's going to be two good chapters. And then we're going to have a Q&A at the last part of the show. So with that being said, I need to give the disclaimer here. Before we start, I do need to let everyone know that this is a peer support group. None of us are medical or mental health professionals. If you have any medical concerns, you should see a probably licensed physician or a TMS physician that we recommend. We like TMS physicians, but you still should see an MD to get anything serious root out. With that being said, now we got a great summarist. His name's Bruce MC, and he's going to give a summary for each chapter. Bruce, oh, I want to give a shout out to y'all for Walt's summaries. How good he's been writing these summaries. I read Steve's summary, and I read Steve's chapter, and I read Walt's summary. And you know, I feel like I'm reading something from two totally different points of view, and both of them are beautiful. Sometimes, not all. You know, he doesn't change the view much. He just gives you another perspective of the same thing, and I think he's doing a great job. So I just want to set it for Walt. But that's it, man. Go ahead.
Well, chapter 28, breathe in and don't forget the out part. And chapter 29, set goals, the big picture with the fine print, are of course from The Great Pain Deception by Steven Ozenich. And it's important to remember that these two chapters are also included in the latter section of the book, which is entitled A Philosophy on Life, Acting on New Knowledge and Healing. And Steve says this: the latter part of the book is about life and living, practical and philosophical, immediate and concise. In other words, this chapter on breath and this chapter on setting goals are more of how-tos and do's and don'ts regarding eliminating your TMS symptoms. Chapter 28, Breathe In and Don't Forget the Out part, is about breathing, obviously. But Steve's main point is that tension aglia sufferers, that is, TMSers, need to breathe with conscious awareness. The goal should be breathing toward the state of alpha brainwave activity. The way to do this is via deep, relaxed breathing. Steve reiterates a point he made before in the book. This is because type T's are short breath takers, breathing from the top of the lungs and ignoring the all-important bottom. And that's the point where you release the tension. And most of his work here, most of what Steve is going over here, rests on the work of Dr. Andrew Weil in his book, Spontaneous Healing. Also, what is the other one? Natural Health, Natural Medicine, The Complete Guide for Self-Care and for Optimum Health. And he's also using the work of Robert Fulford, who's a doctor of osteopathy. Sometimes Steve puts in these little things, lays these little seeds, kernels of knowledge, and mixes them in with the main message. And Wolford is a doctor of osteopathy, and he felt that many health problems were the result of lack of fullness at the first breath at birth. Wolford calls it first breath trauma. And there's some hints there about the whole universe breathing here. It sitting behind this is Hindu philosophy too. One point that Steve doesn't make that Andy Weil does in natural health, natural medicine, is that breathing is one activity that is done both consciously and automatically. Hence, it connects the conscious and unconscious functions of the brain. So it's a pathway into the unconscious. It's a way of changing the unconscious content that is driving your TMS. It's an access point. And I don't think he makes that point strongly enough. Andy does, but everyone has these different philosophies of breathing. I happen to look at Michael Brown's presence process, and he's talking about into the breath, and that's the beginning of the presence process. He says the experiential journey through the presence process is initiated when we first consciously connect our breathing. And he recommends 15 minutes twice a day, only through the mouth or only through the nose. That's his way. And Andy Weil has another kind of Buddhist breath, where you inhale for 4 seconds, a total breath, hold it for 7, then release it for 8 through the nose.
Yeah, that form you're talking
in,
about.
7 hold, 8 out.
Yes, that's
and
important
he's
form.
Got another, Andy has another kind of breathing where you breathe as absolutely slow as you can, to sort of put yourself in a state of suspended animation. Mm-hmm. But you can see all of these techniques are different roads to the same goal, which is finding an access point to your unconscious and calming your unconscious. That out-breath seems to be essential in all of these breath strategies, these breath exercises, because that's what releases the tension. And
and
it's like Steve says that TMSers are short breathers. They breathe from the top of their lungs and hold in that stress. And what these breathing techniques do is to release it. And another point that Steve makes in here is about counseling. But if we want to stick with breathing.
You know, how many of us here actually practice that? How many of us actually, you know, breathe like that? You know, not that it makes you better than anybody, but it helps, you know? And I'm just saying, which one of us has took up, you know, that breathing style? You know, I think he said, Walt said in his summary, or, you know, one in, hold for 4 and blow out 2 or something like that. I've been practicing this for over 2 months, and I did, and I'm not kidding. I didn't even know this was going to be one of the chapters in it, but you know, when I started this, mm-hmm. but I'm up to breathing in for like a, you know, count of 8 to 10 and holding it for like 20, 30 seconds and then blowing out for a count of 10 to 15. And I'm blowing all the air out. You know, I learned this from some book from like 200 years ago, a yoga guy. You know, I just like some of the old stuff. But anyway, hey, it really changed my energy levels. It made me feel like as if I was out running, you know, after a couple of weeks, because you got to get used to it. You got to get used to, you know, doing this style of breathing. That's the reason you breathe in first. The way I learned was for a count of 2. I think he might have said that in the book, blow out for a count of 4. I mean, hold for a count of 8 and blow out for a count of 4. But you
there
can
are different
change
ways
up as you gain it.
It's obvious. That's what I was trying to say, that there
well, it's the longer
are different
you can hold
breath,
the air.
Breath exercises, but they all contain these 3 parts, don't they?
Yeah.
And the release is the most important part. Where
yeah, the
goal is
working your way up.
Out.
Yeah, just like exercise, jogging or anything else. Work your way up.
One thing I wanted to add about what Michael Brown said was that he thinks conscious breathing is the first step toward insight and what he calls felt perception. This is the same thing that Howard Schubiner would call mindfulness. That's Michael Brown's word for mindfulness is felt perception. And he says the road to that begins with breathing. it seems like everybody comes down to that same, has that same message, whether it's Andy Weil or it's Michael Brown or it's Howard Schubner or it's these Buddhist saints or Hindu saints from thousands of years ago. They've all discovered this route to that links the conscious and the unconscious. Yeah, because you can will your breath, you can make yourself breathe in and out, but it's also involuntary. It's operated by the autonomic nervous system, what they call a via media between two extremes. Does anyone want to talk about how they feel when they're doing these exercises? I think myself that it's not what exercise you do, it's if you do it, if you repeatedly do it. I think it sinks in then. You know,
if you have one.
Say a little bit more, Bruce. I'm interested in hearing what you got to say.
I think just repeating the action over and over again, eventually it sinks in. No matter what type of exercise, breathing exercise you're doing, it's a matter of doing it over and over again, and the message sinks in. It's just like healing from TMS. If you keep repeating the message over and over that it's psychological, not physical, eventually that sinks in. It seems like at a certain point in my breathing exercises, I become detached from my obsessions. I can watch those ideas and obsessive compulsive behavior patterns float by, and I don't get attached to them. The same with an internal bully. I can listen to it, but I don't get hung up on it. If you keep doing breathing exercises long enough, eventually you become detached from that process that's been driving you. You cut it off at its root. Isn't that what the Buddhists would say? You go right to the root. It's a radical procedure. Because when you're meditating, you hear these voices, but you're not attached to them. You say, oh, it's just an idea. It's just an emotion. Oh, it's not me. It's not real. It's not.
Now, when you talk about repeating it a lot, are you talking about in one session or over the course of weeks or months?
Over the course of time, going back to it again and again and again. And then one day you notice that these obsessive emotions and ideas are going by like a river, like clouds forming in the sky. But they're not you. They're not, you can say, just get out of here. They don't, you're not a non-attachment. Outcome independence, I guess. It's one aspect of what Alan's talking about. You're not getting into a fight with your internal bully and getting driven by it. Mm-hmm. You just say, well, make all the noise you want. I'm just not part of you.
That's well said. I like that.
All right. Just an idea that occurred. So.
Well, it's that it kind of relates to what I was saying. I don't know if you people noticed. There was some chat talk recently in the Is It Possible to Try Too Hard to recover from TMS, and we talked about that a little bit, about meditation and how that's important for TMS healing. And it seems like one of the things I enjoy the most about being on the forum is seeing how people can kind of and I don't know how they do it. I try to guide them in that direction, but it seems like a crucial thing for healing is getting to that place of equanimity that you're describing, where, you know, the thoughts come in and you let them come in. You know, it's okay. And it seemed like you were articulating that type of idea.
Yeah,
as well.
That okay business, like Howard says, that's okay. Yeah, it's okay. What's the problem with it? Instead of raging on saying, oh, I've got this internal dialogue with a bully who criticizes me and it's making my life into a living Hades. Well, let it talk. Let it do what it wants. It's not really part of me. It's just a part of a a screen, a living screen that's going by. It's just the way thoughts and emotions are. But they don't need to be you. They're not you. They're
absolutely
just thoughts and ideas.
I for the longest time, I used to think that, you know, it wasn't honest to try and change your thoughts or your feelings because, you know, reality was the way that it was, and you're just going to feel the way that you feel, and anything else is dishonest. And then I realized, well, no, there's reality is the way that it is, and I have to have the courage to face reality as it is and to face the things I don't like, but that doesn't mean that I have to feel bad about it. You know, and it's okay to, when I hear you say it's okay, it feels like that's just talking about how I'm feeling about the world. I'm not denying that, you know, there are things in the world that I don't like. I'm just saying, you know, there are things in the world I don't like, and that's okay. It's okay that my mind is wandering. I'd love to be the perfect meditator and have my mind be completely clear, but I'm not, and that's okay. It's really okay.
Yeah, it seems though if you get 5 minutes of clarity out of a session when you've achieved detachment, it counteracts any of the other bad stuff. It's like you've been there. You actually did it, you know, and then everything
else. And you're in monkey mind for most of the day, right? So
No, not at all. For real. No. That's what I was fixing to get to just a minute ago. But anyway, No, it'll clear you up. I took control over any of the out of, you know, the negative reactions and all that stuff and the monkey mind and all that other stuff. I took care of that. Oh, man, I think I finally whooped it all just a few months ago. But the breathing did something totally different. It just seemed to go ahead and just close in on everything. And I have had a lot more control. I don't remember having any monkey mind really the whole year, for the last 6 months at least. But I know when it comes on, I can fix it. Well, whatever you want to call it, whether it's what do you call monkey mind? Mental gossip? What do you call it?
Internal dialogue.
Internal dialogue. Any of that? Anything that's any voice that might have been. You know, or anything I might have failed or anything like that. I know how to work with every bit of it. But the breathing's really helped, like you said in the book. And
I noticed the voices aren't so loud.
Okay.
They aren't so obsessive. It's not like I wake up in the morning and there's the bully, and then I start a dialogue with him.
But
or
you
her,
know,
and then
listen,
by the end of the day, I just like whooped. It's driven me on it. Now it doesn't. I can't even remember when it stopped, though.
That's it. You don't.
Yeah, it's like
I don't
another
remember when a lot of things stop. It cuts
you off from that old messed up way of doing things. You just don't do it anymore. But when you're in the middle of it, you can't imagine stopping it. You know,
no.
It's like, one thing leads to another then.
Exactly. When you're in the middle of it, you ain't going to stop it right in the middle of it, right in the middle of a panic attack, an anxiety attack, or just too much, you know, information going in your head. Sometimes you just have to take a day off to clear everything up, you know. But that's for another
it's
show.
It's really how much mental energy you put into these dialogues, how much your ego is invested in them.
Yeah, and it's not always about all the hours, you know. It's about, like you said, how much you put into it, you know, and how much you believe it, how much you practice it. You don't have to sit around there and, you know, practice, you know, all through the day, because eventually you will get control over all this, you know. You should. I mean, you know, you should.
It just becomes irrelevant, like Forrest is saying.
Well, it could be, yeah. I mean, if you got stuff, I got sounds. Everybody, all of us do, and it's right from wrong. Which one's right and which one's wrong? You know, if they want to argue, sometime they can argue and play around, but we still know we're in control, right?
Yeah, it's like Dr. Wheel says it. He calls breathing the doorway to control the autonomic nervous system, And that's one way to chill out. It works. I mean, I think so. It's worked for me. And I think repetition is a matter of doing it every day. I always set aside a half hour, 45 minutes, and just do it. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But then if you keep returning again and again and again, finally it does work.
I like the way he broke that down, the way the up. I think it was in Walt Summer, the old man, you know, and he hadn't walked or something, but he got to where he would just stand or walk a few feet, you know, and then he'd walk a little further.
That's in the next chapter. That's setting goals.
Okay.
The guy was talking about.
Yeah.
Before we move on.
Yeah.
Please.
I'd just like to say something because people are always talking about breathing, and I don't really breathe much. So I spent 50 hard-earned bucks on the Butyeko method from Russia. And this guy works with asthmatics, and there's quite a, I think he's got several clinics. Well, I don't think he's around anymore, but the method has several clinics in the U.S. as well. And he works with asthmatics and apparently does quite well. And so I got this $50 course, and I was trying to implement it. And the more, and he says that don't quote me, a while at it, but he says that you have to slow down your breathing and what the hell is that racket?
That's right. I mean, call him out. Call him
somebody
out.
Build a bicycle or something.
Herbie, do you know who that is? Do you know who's making that noise?
Yeah, I got to put some oil in a squeaky chair, man. Gosh. Y'all should have told me 20 minutes ago.
You know, I typed it out in one of the chat rooms.
Yeah.
But I never sent it, so I just sent it now.
We know where it's coming from now, so.
Wow.
I got so used to it, guys, I couldn't even hear it, you know? But as soon as you brought it up, I thought, man.
Anyway.
Good guy, Herbie.
Sorry about that.
I'm sorry, enjoy. You keep.
Oh no, don't really. No, I just you know, I'm quick on the trigger, and so you see. But anyway, it really actually works in with this breathing business because I'm no good at relaxing, never have been, and never have been in my entire life. When I was 9 years old, my parents sent me to a speech therapist because my voice was so high and squeaky that nobody could hear me. Like it was out in the stratosphere somewhere. So I'm trying to do this breathing stuff, and I've always tried to do this breathing stuff and relax and all this stuff. And for me, it absolutely doesn't work. But, Herbie, you said something that really made me realize. I realized that this IFS stuff that I've been doing, I actually have probably reduced my monkey mind by about 75%. And I did not realize it. So thank you for bringing that up. So maybe if I keep working on my screwed up self, eventually I'll be able to start breathing like all you sensible people.
I notice when you get out of the car and you first start hiking with a pack, you'll breathe so hard when you come up from the city. And you'll still have your old city-based breathing habits.
Yeah.
And after a couple of days of hiking with a pack, you relax. And you get into the environment. And then you start noticing that your breath changes. And it isn't just conditioning. You're relaxing and you're getting more oxygen. And what was that that Herbie wrote on the After Walt summary? Where he was talking about how athletes have 1/7 the cancer rates of non-athletes because of the circulation of the lymph, lymph nodes. And that would mean white blood cells, too, churning around. picking up all of those malignant cells and clearing them out of the system. And that stands to reason. It really does. If you've ever gotten into shape where you can just run along and not pant, where you're just taking in oxygen efficiently, you can really tell that it's doing something good for your body. That's for, and your mind, for sure.
Butchek doesn't seem to be into deep breathing, but he's into very slow, relaxed breathing. And
oh,
I
yes,
imagine
exactly.
That probably has an effect.
That's the thing you notice about being in super shape, is when you're running or you're exercising, you don't get out of breath. You do everything in a very controlled fashion. And the oxygen comes in much more efficiently than when you're all tense.
But you see, that comes back to the monkey mind, because I'm not an exerciser, to put it mildly. I'm sort of not dead against it. I don't do it because it's boring. Like, I just can't bear it. I need to be able to put myself in sort of that, in a kind of a meditative state, where your mind isn't leaping all over the map. And, you know, because that, what happens is that between the exercise and the monkey mind, I just get hysterically bored, and I have to stop doing that and sit down and just, I usually use the computer, or I used to write in the old days, journal, you know, and I gradually get my thoughts in some kind of order. But the IFS is helping a lot with that, because I don't have all these parts screaming at me all the time trying to get my attention, right?
Well, that's just what the English romantic lake poets were trying to do, is to erase the subject-object dichotomy by getting back to nature. So it sounds like all of these techniques erase that, you know, the I-thou division.
Oh, you're totally right. And I couldn't get a lot closer to nature. I live in a swamp in moose country, you know.
Yeah, but I know what it's like up there.
I don't hardly ever go outside, you know.
Yeah, you go along the road and there are the moose in the ponds.
You know, there was something y'all mentioned, was talking about just a minute ago. Everybody can hear me, right? About the exercise and the breathing and stuff. The breathing's what I did first before I started my running again. I just now started running again about 3 weeks ago or so now. And the breathing is actually, breathing without running was what actually got me the energy and vitality to get up and go and jog and, you know, walk before you jog, right? But anyway, to go outside and start exercising.
It got you back to the zone.
It brought my vitality back to me without having to run. And, you know, there's a lot of studies done on this breathing and how it can help you, you know, get in shape without even having to go. And I mean, just think, everybody that plays sports, think, what is the main thing they're doing that's helping them get in better shape? Well, we can understand running and all that, you know, helps the muscles, but what's helping the heart and the lungs and everything else is that hard breathing they're doing, that deep breathing, you know, when they're doing it, when they're running, they're doing it out there while they're running. But if you can't run, if you're in a wheelchair or something, you can practice it right there in that wheelchair and have the vitality and the lung power and strength that, you know, somebody that might be going jogging has, you know. You just have to build up the jogging muscles.
You guys are inspiring, because I really haven't been able to do that breathing. That's just been number one. I can't do that. But I can set myself a goal of figuring how to get from where I am to breathing, to exercising, to, you know, all this other jazz, eh? And I can do that. I've done it. You know, I did get into fitness at one point in my life, but I just about died of extreme boredom. I was swimming.
I like that.
Pool. And I literally got TMS from the water. Every time I touched that water, I broke into a rash, because I so desperately needed to stop doing that. you know, swimming. I was just so sick of it. I could have screamed. But that's okay, because now, like, you've given me a vision of where to go, and I just have to figure out how to get there. And, yeah, this is doable. Boy, I'll update you as it progresses. How's that
good
for taking a chance and putting it on the line?
Good.
Yeah. Sounds good, guys. Yeah.
Awesome.
That's wonderful. Mind and body are connected.
Yeah.
So if we if we jump over counseling, we could get on to the next chapter.
Good man, Bruce.
Go ahead.
And the next chapter, chapter 29, is on setting goals. The
oh,
big picture with
go
the fine print. And Steve prefaces this short chapter with a quote from O. Carl Simononton, MD, and others in a book called Getting Well Again. He says that the most effective tool we have found for getting our patients to take specific positive action is to ask them to set new life goals. And Steve talks about two types of goals. He says they're long-term life goals that require an individual to reflect deeply and come up with a new future vision where you envision yourself to be at peace. Now, this takes a long time. This is the long road. And then he has another set of goals that are probably more appropriate for TMSers. He calls them short-term goals that you can tackle more readily. They're mostly movement goals, like climbing a flight of stairs or making it around one circuit at a high school track. And he talks about the rebellious child, getting it to listen to your adult self and not the other way around. He gets back to the idea that crying, as much as exhibiting pain symptoms, no longer gets your attention, but you must reward the child for his acquiescence. And that's the other part of goals, is rewards. He's built most of his advice on Fred Emer's Rapid Recovery from Neck and Back Pain, where Fred says that you must associate the reward with the goal, making sure you reward yourself once a goal is achieved. I think Mark Sofer in his book says, once you've had an activity without any pain, go home and celebrate. Celebrate some way, some kind of positive reinforcement, not delayed reinforcement. Steve says that you have to build yourself up, I think echoing Fred Emer, through incremental movement. Steve says that he's never seen anyone who sets goals and then stuck with them who has failed to heal. He lays in a lead, one of his themes of his book here, where he talks about the Jeffersonian phobia of resolution. And this is a recurrent theme in Steve's book. It's the fear of actually accomplishing something. That's why Thomas Jefferson had all these magnificent plans that he never executed. He kept building Monticello, very much like Mrs. Winchester kept expanding the Winchester Mystery House. He never brought it to a conclusion. He had all of these great ideas, though, in potential. That way he never had to... I guess he couldn't face, that's the perfectionist dilemma. Once you get done, then there you are. It's subject to criticism. It's not perfect anymore. It's complete. Therefore, people can point at it and pick it apart. But as long as it's this great dream, and that's pretty much what Steve says in a nutshell in setting goals.
I believe it's so important to have goals, you know, the small ones first and then work up to the bigger ones, of course. But
yeah, he talks about walking upstairs, where if you can't walk up one, just get yourself to walk up one step or two steps and then just keep adding and adding on to that.
This could indeed be a fairly quick chapter, because I think this is an intuitive idea that I think a lot of us get, and I think he explains it very well in the chapter. This is the basic idea. It's similar, actually, to the NPR article that's been making the rounds recently, where you just have to regain activity.
Well, you know, he put in that he did mention about something about people that's in fear of creating structural damage. I mean, that's a go, you know, to get over to being able to walk again. You got to get over the fear that you're going to hurt when you do walk, you know, without the condition response being there. Of course,
I've heard about these pain management clinics. I think there's one down in Florida that has pretty good results, where they use drugs to stop the pain, but they also engage the whole group in various physical activities, nonstop and variable, where they change all the time.
Yeah.
You know, that breaks that pattern, that
you gotta move
response. Yeah. So it isn't really taking the drugs that's really doing it. It's actually just getting out there and doing something
reconditioning.
Steve talked about it last time where you re-educate your body-mind link up by doing various little physical exercises like walking toe-to-toe or walking in figure eights. I think I've seen them do that in PT. So these things may work, but not for the reasons they think they work.
Yeah. He has an interesting explanation about it. He says, by setting these physical goals, you make the rebellious child inside of you listen to you and not the other way around. Movement and goal setting tells the id that the mature self is in control and that crying, i.e. the pain, no longer brings people to the inner child. Soon the child will begin to listen and change, but he will not commit easily unless you reward him for his acquiescence. And that's mm-hmm. where you start getting into this kind of idea from Amir of, you know, after you force yourself to walk up the stairs and you push through that pain, you give yourself a reward.
Immediately, too. You mm-hmm. can't have a delayed reward. It has to make immediate sense to the child in a very simple way. Yeah, well, there's also, I think one of the problems we have as TMSers is letting ourselves feel good. Letting ourselves celebrate after we do something. You figure the other shoe's going to drop. Something bad is going to happen. You know?
That fear right there.
I'm just getting to the point where I come back from a walk and I'll get in my car and sit there and read a book for a few minutes and I'll just let myself enjoy it.
Yeah.
And not feel like there's something else and something else and something else I have to do. Just enjoying that moment in itself. Without all of these add-ons.
Anybody want to add to that? What point they're getting at? What basically, where have you came that you can say, hey, you know, I've came this far. This is where I've gotten. At least I've made this type of progress.
What would the behavioralists say about this? I know Alan Gordon goes into that quite a bit. I think at the start of the recovery program. He talks about behavioralists, about Skinner and Pavlov, and so on. What would their angle be on this reward system? It sounds pretty simple, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like Pavlov, right? I mean, well, a lot of times he would reward him because he wanted to see him slobber more, right? But it sounds just like
or
what
Skinner.
They do.
Yeah,
it sounds more like Skinner.
I think actually, Bruce. Yeah, that was me. I think who wrote that. I think.
Okay.
I wrote it about one of Alan's essays. There's a thread, but what I wanted to say is that Sarno talks a lot about how the unconscious mind. He doesn't talk a lot, but it's throughout his books. He talks about how the unconscious mind is the older. Limbic system in our brain, the emotional brain is the unconscious, and the emotional brain, those older parts of the brain are also where classical conditioning happens, and Pavlovian conditioning happens. And so it kind of makes sense that if the unconscious brain is the problem here in TMS, it's the part that we have to convince that it's safe to walk, because that's where all of this conditioning is happening. So we have to use conditioning to fight conditioning, I guess.
Yeah, recondition. Yeah.
But you realize
kind of theory
just how conditioned
that body is.
What did you say, Enjoy? I'd love to hear you.
I like Candace Pert's theory that the body is the unconscious, the subconscious mind. I love that. It seems intuitively true to me.
Does it? Because I, in some sense, I don't really know what it means. I mean,
I believe it. I think that's real.
The body is the unconscious mean? What does that mean?
Well, I think about acupuncture.
Well, let Enjoy. We got to let the lady speak.
I don't know if we can. I don't know if I know. I think Herbie gets it. You just feel that it's true, because the whole point of it is it's not the brain, right? It's the entire body, and they say, like, people say stuff like, well, your heart communicates with your brain more than your brain communicates with your heart, and they say stuff like that, and you think to yourself, what the heck does that mean? So, you know, but if there's just something really that really sounds true about that.
When you do the reconciliation process or solidation process that Dr. Alexander talks about a lot on the threads, you'll feel it instantly release in your body. And of course, you're doing some images and visualizations. But when you do this reconciliation process, you will feel an instant erase of this emotion that you had attached to a memory for years, it could have been. And you'll feel a release of it. So how is the mind not attached to the body and the body attached to the mind when you start understanding that part, you know? It's, you know, what's the old saying, you know, somebody thinks and then they blush. So we know it's attached in that manner. But the reconciliation process really proves it. I mean, it's powerful. And if anybody on here gets a chance to check into that that process there, who's the guy's name? Ecker?
Ecker's the man.
Yeah, check into that guy, because they are really onto some good stuff.
I think it's one to say that the unconscious mind is connected to the body. It seems another thing to say that the unconscious mind is the body, as if.
Well, yeah.
Like, I think the unconscious mind arises from
solid, right? That's what she means.
The upper brain stem and, you know, and the cerebrum. But it's all in neural tissue, primarily in neural tissue. There's maybe a little bit that goes on with the heart, and maybe a little bit that happens in neural tissue in the gut. But I don't know if my fingernail or my bones has very much to do with my unconscious mind. That's what maybe it does.
It's the central nervous system connects with the lower brain stem, and the central nervous system extends throughout the body. It's kind of like semantics, isn't it? It's like
begins. Not to be pedantic about it, but one could say that, for example, the central nervous system is the unconscious mind, as opposed to
saying, but it's body.
You think it's the body? See, I think the unconscious mind is manifested in the body. That
the people that get
effects in the body.
People get kidney transplants, and then all of a sudden they start having dreams that the other person had. You know, there's a case where the woman had the heart transplant, and when she had it, she actually was having nightmares about the guy that was murdering her, about a guy murdering her. Come to find out, she went and told the sheriff, and they traced all this back. And there was actually a woman that was killed around the time she was dreaming and everything. And through what she saw and what she remembered the guy's face, they caught the killer of the woman that was already dead. And she had the heart in her from the other woman that got killed. But anyway, there's stories out there left and right like that, where you get transplants, they start having their dreams. You know, memories rest in the body. Feelings rest in the body. The body's attached to each other, right? That's why we call it mind-body, correct?
I totally agree with that. But or I totally agree with the connection. I don't know about the memories residing in the body. That might be a little bit tough one for me. But, you know, like there's
but you know what happens to us? What happens to us is that we want our minds, we want to be able to intellectually encompass everything.
Uh-huh. And you can't.
And it's absolutely impossible. And once you get past that, the world that opens up is a completely different world. I mean, the mind is very important. Of course it is. But really, the mind asks questions. The cosmos or the unconscious or the soul or, you know, whatever you want to call it, whatever that mysterious thing is, that's what answers the questions.
Interesting.
And your body helps your mind understand.
I bet that a lot of people have thoughts on this. Our four co-hosts have been talking a lot recently. Anyone else want to share their thoughts on all this? The mind-body connection, unconscious mind, really anything we've discussed?
Goals was the main thing we was talking about. You know, it's just so important to keep goals and know that that's a major part. Goals could be like journaling, learning how to journal good, you know, learning what repression means, and, you know, so much more stuff, you know, that it seems like everybody has to train for several months, you know, just to get the TMS knowledge down, you know? So, you know, set those goals and let it be beneficial to you. We was having some good conversations, guys, before we got started. So, you know, I'd like to keep it rolling for another 10 minutes and just wing it for a minute.
All right.
You know what I mean? Anybody got anything they want to talk about other than breathing or goals? You know, anything. We want to bring up something like, what is this or what is that or why is this going on and I ain't got control of it yet or I don't know. Anything.
Okay, well, I have something that kind of happened this week that was kind of strange.
Okay.
I've been practicing the breathing exercises, and it was weird. Every day I lay down and I do a guided imagery thing for about 20, 25 minutes, incorporating the breathing. And it was really strange because the other day I had a couple of episodes almost like, you know, like that moment where you're going to fall asleep and then you've got this jerk and then you wake yourself up. Mm-hmm. It was sort of like that, only it was mentally. And it was just this moment of, I don't know if I should call it clarity or what the thing was. It was just like, whoa, that was startling. And it was just very bizarre. Has anybody ever dealt with something like that before?
Was it anxiety producing or was it the feel good? Did it produce something good or bad?
I don't really know. I think about the only thing way that I could describe it was just a moment of feeling disconnected.
Okay.
It was just very strange. So and I don't know if it was really anxiety or if it was just there or if maybe I was getting ready to tip off into sleep. And it was just that moment and I jarred myself awake. But it's like, wow, that was weird. And then I was wondering, it's like, well, am I on the verge of breaking through into a new level of, I don't know, whatever, you know, alpha brainwave activity or whatever.
Well, you already been at alpha. You already been at the alpha level or you wouldn't experience that. You want to keep going in that area, I'd say, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That means what you just said means that you're practicing it and you're doing it right. So just stay in there and just travel through. You know, as long as it's good thoughts and stuff you're focusing or you're thinking about, you know, enjoy the journey, right?
Yeah, it was just, I thought of another word more to describe it. It was more like a freezing moment. Is what it felt like. And I remember thinking that's what it felt like at the time that
freezing?
I told myself, like, yeah, just kind of this. Ugh.
Oh,
so it doesn't sound pleasant.
Well, no. It was just, it was so different.
It's not too bad either. What happens is you jarred yourself in mid-sleep. You was about to go to sleep and you caught yourself. Is that what you, in a way, but you didn't
wake
up? It
wasn't quite like that. Cause usually when I've experienced that, there's usually some kind of a, you know, muscular jerk. It was just strange. And I wasn't really disconcerted, but I wasn't really, oh, this is fun. Let's go with it. It was just kind of there. And I thought, what is going on now?
Yeah. Well, maybe you don't want to go in that area no more.
You. It sounds like it was brand new to you, and so, you know, of course, the first few times you're going to be a little bit, you know, like, what's this? But that sounds very exciting to me. Wow. Because well, like we really do have to move beyond our mind into something more cosmic.
Yeah, you really do. That's part of, you know, growing in the process of you know, taking a higher level. You want to be able to do that and enjoy the journey.
And I just want to make sure it's an enjoy the journey and not a psychotic episode.
Well, no, <it's not.
laughs> if you're in the middle of meditative, doing your meditations, and somebody slams a door or anything like that, that'll get you to where it causes anxiety. So just make sure that you're always, you know, everybody in the house knows what you're going to do, and when you do your meditations, because if somebody makes loud sounds and stuff like that, it'll give you that experience too. Because it did me. But anyway, I just enjoy the journeys now.
I can kind of relate to what you're saying. Sometimes I will get a feeling out of nowhere, and what I notice is my autonomic nervous system, my adrenaline jumps up. So I can kind of relate to that. And what I think is happening is I think that there's unconscious tension that I'm not totally aware of, and there's some sort of thought in my unconscious that kind of triggers me. Is that similar to what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that would. It was just kind of such a strange. And that's what I had wondered. It's like, okay, because I've been, you know, doing some digging on things and trying some different things. You know, because my TMS, I just have been having more flares lately. And so we've got a lot going on right now, too. I mean, I've been, Forrest, you had mentioned I was muting. And it's like this parade of teenage drama, you know, being my son who's newly fledged and he's crawling with his crises. And, you know, it's just one thing after another. So I'm sitting here with my glass of Moscato.
You're a hero. Yes.
Just trying to roll with it and find a sense of humor in it. And
that's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can totally relate. And so, I mean, maybe this is something for me to talk about. So Enjoy in the chat room. Do you want to say it out loud, Enjoy?
Well, I just wanted to say that I've heard the theory that the sympathetic nervous system is attached to both worlds, and it's where the connections are made.
Oh, you're going to have a hard time convincing me of that. Let me tell you, I'm a matter in motion type of guy. But finish your point. I'm sorry. Keep going.
No, it's okay. No, we'll talk. I mean, I don't know enough about the sympathetic nervous system to make any kind of an argument, but the person who said this was a pretty wise Eastern sage, and what he knew about the sympathetic nervous system all came from the cosmos, believe me. Like, he wasn't educated, you know, in a Western sense. That's what he said, and it makes sense that there's some kind of interface. And so when you cross that little line, you know, you're going to feel something. You're going to have some kind of a sense that you've gone somewhere with something different.
Frame that a little differently.
I used to go to see a cranial sacral therapist, mm-hmm. and the stuff that woman came up with while she was doing a treatment, she was so in touch. And I would say, how the hell would you know that? You know, and she just kind of looked at me and she said, well, it was in your body, you know, so I don't know. Don't ask me. I think this stuff is really fascinating, though.
Well, I think how I frame it isn't, you know, it's a little different from your perspective on that. But, you know, I think we are a spiritual being also. And when mm-hmm. we get glimpses into the spiritual realm, I think we're not really aware of that. We're not as cognizant, especially in a Western culture where it's, you know, show me, and if it can't be quantified in the lab, it isn't real. You know, there are those inexplicable things that I just mark up to spirit and kind of this different dimension, the multidimensionality of the very essence of who we are, body, soul, and spirit. So,
yeah.
Awesome. Set it, go and be good to yourself.
Oh, but so,
go ahead, bro.
I thank you. There was something I wanted to say. I mean, I guess I kind of wanted to follow up with North Star. And I'm probably one of the least spiritual people out there. I'm kind of very grounded in the scientific approach. So if I can't demonstrate it, it's hard for me to see it. But just to put that out there, but when I did notice myself kind of getting that startle stuff, not startle stuff, but I think I've noticed, and Joy says, I'll pray for you. We'll see what happens. I still got a number of years left in my life. Maybe I'll wise up, but I'm not expecting it. But anyway, so, you know, it different perspectives make the world a richer place. But what I did say is that it's important to start listening to, I think for me, having that type of reaction, maybe like what you're describing, North Star. Man, Herbie, I think you just have the most sensitive mic in the world. I hear you rustling those papers, and you're just... I feel like we're at like a, I don't know, some sort of convention. Anyway, it's not as funny when I say it as when Enjoy says it. She's got that delivery. But I guess for me, all of that is just a signal to take better care of myself, and to listen to my needs a little bit and to check in and. Don't tell Enjoy this, I was thinking about doing some focusing, maybe some IFS. I'm gonna start with focusing, but maybe it'll kind of blend into IFS since I've at least read enough IFS that I respect the methodology if it goes there. So anyway, that's my take on what you said, North Star.
Hey,
that's all right. And check back with me next week. Things seem to be shifting around. I feel like so many of the things that I thought I had all figured out black and white have been dumped out of the box and onto the floor, and you kind of pick through it all and go, okay, what's left here?
Right, yeah.
It's all about, though, the good stuff. Enjoy,
I just got to say, I so enjoy you. I love your sauciness and... You are just a hoot. I really enjoy you.
Me too.
Enjoy. There you go. Yeah.
I appreciate it. I've tried to stifle myself 8 years, and it's not really working.
Good.
There's nothing more than I like than a woman who is now, because you're over 60, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm 68.
Okay, some of my best friends, I'm almost 50, and to me there is nothing more fun in this world than a woman over 60 who's just finding her voice and going, you know what, I'm this is who I am. And I just enjoy that so much.
I'm glad to hear it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, that was awesome, guys. We're gonna call it with that. That sounds like a connection. I mean, that's what the whole book's about. Connection, friendships, anything you want to call it. Hey, great discussion, everybody. I mean, y'all made the show, so
awesome.
That'll be it for the discussion tonight.
Thank you.